And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today. I hope you're having a wonderful day, because this is a day God fashioned for you before the foundation of the world. Enjoy it. He didn't intend for you to suffer today. He intended for you to enjoy his presence. He intended for you to bask in the beauty of his creation. And anything else that's getting in the way, kick it out, okay? And say, no, you are not ruining my day. God made this day for me to enjoy, and I'm going to enjoy it. Of course, I know there are times when things intervene that make that difficult. But as I've said before, the joy of the Lord, which runs as a deep river on the inside of you, is still there to anchor you, to comfort you, to strengthen you. The word says the joy of the Lord is our strength. And we need strength at a time like this, don't we? We really do. We need strength at a time like this. I posted something on Facebook last night, right after the verdict on the Derek Chauvin trial came down. Of course, he was found guilty on all counts. And I posted something right away. I happened to agree with the verdict, but I said, even if I didn't agree, even if the verdict was something different than what I thought should come down, I would defer to the jury, because they were there to listen to every bit of evidence, watch the witnesses, judge their demeanor, determine whether they thought they were speaking the truth or not, look at all the information, look at all the video, look at all the context, and then come to a judgment. It's apparently a jury made up of people from different backgrounds and ethnicities, but they came together unanimously, and they came together pretty quickly with a verdict. My post said, I am so proud of my country, because in spite of the craziness, the wild Maxine Waters making threats and the potential of violence, not only in the city of Minneapolis, but all across the country, I believe those jurors went into that jury room and made a decision based on what they believed the facts and the law dictated. That's the beauty of our system. It is not perfect. Excuse me, because we are not perfect. But it is about as close as anybody's ever come to a judicial system that gives the correct verdict. I mean, one of the principles of our judicial system is we would rather let the guilty go free than punish the innocent. That's a principle of American jurisprudence. We'd rather let the guilty go free than punish the innocent. And so our jurors have to come to truth, to a moral certainty. They have to be able to sleep at night, was the standard we were always taught in law school, that you can go home and your conscience is clear that you've done the right thing, even when you've taken away someone's freedom because you've done what you really believed you needed to do. Now, we don't know what the sentence is going to be. I predict it's going to be about 20 years. He could get up to 40, but I don't think the judge is going to give him 40 years. I think he's more likely to get somewhere in the middle of that, probably around 20 years, and he'll probably serve a good portion of that and be let out on parole at some point. I mean, he has no criminal record, no criminal background. It's not that he's a threat to the community. But, you know, I also said in a post I put on Facebook, if you think that this is going to calm down the Marxists who are busy trying to undermine the stability of this country, forget it. It's not going to happen. They will not allow Americans to have a moment of unity, not a moment. I said when this whole George Floyd incident took place, I said the country was completely unified in abhorring what they saw happen to that man. I didn't talk to anybody who didn't kind of shake their head and go, wow, you know, I know there's some things that went on before, but my goodness gracious, I mean, 9.5 minutes with your foot on the man's neck, that's... somehow that just doesn't seem right. That just, and anybody who looked at that tape and watched Derek Chauvin as he sort of blithely and nonchalantly just stayed there. And, you know, I thought about this because, you know, I work out a little bit and exercise, and, you know, my old Marine Corps habits never left me. You know, it takes a lot of energy to stay on one knee like that for 9.5 minutes. I mean, think about that. That's not an easy thing to do. I mean, maybe he's in relatively good shape and it wasn't a problem for him. But you just get down on one knee and stay there for 9 minutes. It's likely to hurt your knee. It's likely to, you know, sort of cramp your body a little bit. But he did it. And he was just as nonchalant about it as he could be. And frankly, I think that that's in part what led to the quick unanimous verdict. I think, just E.W. Jackson's opinion, I think that if Derek Chauvin had gotten on the stand and was able to give a reasonable explanation for why he did what he did, and I don't know that he could have come up with one. I don't know that there would have been one. But if he had had one, and he got on the stand and articulated that and said, look, folks, I didn't mean to hurt that man. I didn't mean to kill that man. I am brokenhearted over it. Here's what I was thinking. Here's what was going on in my mind. This was my mindset at the time. And given the jurors some reasonable explanation for his behavior that they could have accepted, I think that it ended up either with a hung jury or an acquittal. But he didn't. He did not have anything to say. And when you're accused of murder as a police officer, it seems to me you want to get on the stand and say, hey, folks, you've got me wrong. I am not a killer. I am not a murderer. I don't want to hurt anybody. I didn't want to hurt this man. Here's why it happened that way. Here's what I was thinking. Here's what distracted me. Here's what happened the day before that maybe had me on, you know, pins and needles or whatever. But he didn't offer anything. No. Now, he's not legally required to. I understand that. And I'm not talking about the jurors holding that against him. I'm just saying that had he given them some reasonable basis for acquitting him, I think they would have taken it. But he didn't. He didn't. And here again, perhaps there is no reasonable basis. Because when you think about him staying on that man's neck for 2.5 minutes after people were saying after he had said, if you're talking, you're breathing, he stops talking. At that point, why don't you check what's going on? How is he? And then when somebody says he's passed out, why don't you stop? Well, let me see what the situation is. Let me find out, you know, what's going on here. And then when somebody says he's not breathing, and I think that was called out to him as well, and you don't stop and say he's not. Let me check. Oh my goodness, the man's not breathing. Yeah, CPR. But he never did. They say he did not take his knee off the man's neck until EMTs tapped him on the shoulder and basically said, "You got to get off him." And by then, he was dead, because they never revived him after that. But when all of us saw that happen, I think Americans were probably 99% unified that this was wrong. This was wrong. And we didn't like it. It shocked us all. But the left wouldn't let us be unified, would they? They wouldn't allow Americans to say, we don't want a police officer or anyone else treating another human being that way, regardless of what he might have done before. We don't want that. But they wouldn't let us have that unity. Oh, no, 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 no. The country's racist. Everybody's racist. Another instance. Immediately turn accusing the country that is unified in its absolute shock and revulsion of what we saw from all racial backgrounds, but the left steps in and says, no, you're all a bunch of racists and you know, horrible people, and so is America. Stand by.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson. Three major scientific discoveries in the past century point to God. That is the arguments Dr. Stephen Meyer makes in a recent commentary in The Federalist, which is based on his new book, Return of the God Hypothesis. The first significant discovery is that the physical universe likely had a beginning. That is contrary to the expectations of scientific materialists who assumed that the material universe was eternal and thus self-existent. Scientists discovered that galaxies far from the Earth were receding faster than those close at hand. This observed red shift demonstrated that the universe was expanding from an initial Big Bang. Later evidence also confirmed these observations that contradicted the expectation of scientific materialists and confirmed those of traditional theists. A second point is that physicists have discovered that we live in a kind of Goldilocks universe. Scientists are finding fundamental physical laws and parameters of our universe that have been finely tuned, against all odds, to make our universe capable of hosting life. Now, this points to the possibility that a cosmic fine tuner exists. Former Cambridge astrophysicist Sir Fred Hoyle argued that a common sense interpretation of the data suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics to make life possible. And third, discoveries in molecular biology have revealed the presence of digital code in the foundation of life. This suggests a master programmer behind the genetic structure of DNA. Bill Gates acknowledged that DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software we've ever created. These three scientific discoveries all point to the existence of a creator God. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Racism, go to viewpoints.info/racism. That's viewpoints.info/racism.
Pastor Robert Jeffress.
Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." Imagine a giant dam that is in danger of collapsing, crumbling, and there's a village below filled with people who are in danger of being flooded. And a group of concerned townspeople go up and they push up against that dam. Then they know ultimately their effort is futile. Ultimately, that dam is going to burst. And that's really what we Christians are trying to do. We're not going to save this culture. We're not going to prevent its ultimate collapse. But we're to push back against evil for as long as we can to give people an opportunity to hear the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. We're to be a preservative, pushing back against evil, but at the same time, we're to be sharing the light of Jesus Christ. And I believe we're to get involved and not get in our spiritual silos and wait for the end to come.
A reminder from American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here. Conservatives seek to formally rebuke Maxine Waters for her public call to violence, but regressives shut them down. How should we process the verdict in the Derek Chauvin case if the scriptures are our guide? How do we reclaim our country and our culture from those who seem determined to destroy it in the name of social justice? That and more next on Focal Point.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
You know, folks, on a lighter note, one thing about live streaming my radio program now is that I used to be able to eat during breaks. In fact, my wife asked me about that this morning. She said, "Well, what are you going to do if you have to do something during the break? Are you just going to get off camera?" And I said, I hadn't thought about that. But since I'm really running behind and I was grabbing a bite to eat during the break, I had to get off camera so you all wouldn't see me gulping my food down. Just a little side note there, just to give you some background on what's going on in the AFR studios behind the scenes. In some cases, you probably don't even want to see what's going on behind the scenes. See us chomping on food and gulping stuff down, trying to get ready for the next segment. Okay, so we have a verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial. And as I said, I agree with the verdict, but even if I had not agreed with the verdict, I would have backed the jury because I would say, look, this is not 1950s. This is not the segregated South. This is not the which was, by the way, controlled by the Democrat Party. This is not the Democrat Party. With its Ku Klux Klan enforcement arm trying to control and destroy the lives of people based on the color of their skin. We are in a different era in our country. And I believe that every American wants to do what is right and wants to treat our neighbor right without regard to the color of their skin, no matter how much the left keeps propounding. You must consider the skin color. You must consider the skin color. The skin color is what's most important. I think most Americans believe in Dr. King's dictum. We don't want to judge others by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And I believe that the jury did that. And I'm proud of my country. I'm proud of our judicial system. I'm proud of our criminal justice system. But before they could lead Chauvin away, almost before they could get him out of the courtroom, Barack Obama, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are already saying, this is not justice. Justice means we have to deal with institutional racism. Which, by the way, is a meaningless statement. It's a meaningless statement. Because, you know, what's systemic racism and institutional racism and unconscious bias and all these ideas are meant to do is this. Convince you, even when there's no evidence of racism, even when there is no activity you can point to that you could say, okay, that's based upon racial animus, even when no one says anything, does anything, acts in any way that would suggest that they have some kind of racial prejudice, it's in the air. It's everywhere. It pervades us all. It's in our clothes. It's in our hair. It's in our cars. It's under our fingernails. It's in our houses. It's in our businesses. It's everywhere. You don't need to prove it. You just know that it's there. You know, it's kind of like God. Kind of like God, except it's an idol. And here they are already screaming, this is not justice. And I heard one, you know, they come up with these empty concepts that if you haven't thought through it, you know, they sound so good probably to the average person educated in these biased institutions that are leaning left, if not going full-blown Marxist, like, we need restorative justice. So what is restorative justice? Restorative justice would be George Floyd going home to be with his family. Well, you know, there's no such thing as restorative justice. That's a concept that the left came up with that is utterly meaningless. There's only justice. See, justice doesn't need a qualifier. And what we've understood in this country is you can never restore what has been lost. You can replace it, perhaps, but you can't restore it. So if somebody steals your car and wrecks it, okay, they can replace the car, but you know what they can't replace? They can't replace the trauma of you knowing that someone has violated your property, gone off and destroyed it, maybe violated your sense of safety and security. You can't ever get that back. You can't ever restore that. What can you do? On some basis, you can figure out a way to replace the car, give you a new car. That's as close as justice can come. Justice in the real world is to compensate people for their loss as best we can. That's all you can do. Somebody comes into your home, does a home invasion, and they don't harm anybody, and they are later caught. What's restorative justice? Well, there's no such thing, because you can't get back the trauma of having somebody invade your private space and put you in threat and in danger of losing your life and taking your property and violating your home and creating a sense of insecurity and fear like nothing you've ever experienced perhaps before. You can't restore that. All you can do is replace the property that's been lost and put the people who did it in prison. But the left comes up with, we have to have restorative justice. You know, They have so wrecked the vocabulary. No wonder they don't like Shakespeare. No wonder they don't like any of the Western writers, because I think, frankly, they so want to pervert the English language and make words mean whatever they want it to mean that they don't want anybody who's ever been a true wordsmith, who's ever been adept at using the English language, to even be heard from. Because then they're free to twist it and turn it and contort it into whatever they want it to be. Change the definitions of words. I was saying to my wife, we were talking the other night about some, and the word gay came up. And I said, well, they're not gay because they're not happy and they're not carefree. And that's the real meaning of the word gay. It has nothing to do with homosexuality. And if you look at any of the old movies or you read an old book and you see the person use the word gay, they're certainly not talking about sexuality. But here again, the left grabbed the word, twisted it, contorted it, put it back out there with new meaning, and then everybody's supposed to buy into it. Like they are the final arbiters of the meanings of words. Don't buy it, folks. And I, you know, here again, Barack Obama and I are both alumni of Harvard Law School. I didn't drink the Kool-Aid. He clearly did. I mean, he gulped that stuff down. And we got to deal with institutional racism. And Ocasio-Cortez, we have to change the system. The system itself is racist. The system works and they can't stand it. I mean, they cannot stand that it works. Well, look, one other thing, and then I want to come to your calls and let's talk about these issues that that are obviously pervasive in the country right now because of the trial of Derek Chauvin. And then in Columbus, Ohio, last night, a young lady, I think her name is Micaiah O'Brien. Let me just double check that name. But she was killed last night. And in fact, you can find the video. It's all over the web. She was killed when a police officer showed up, found her wielding a knife and trying to kill another young lady. I mean, you can see it in the video. She is going after the young lady with a knife. And the police officer fires. They tell her, stop. You know, you can hear them, stop, because it's a kind of a melee. She gets this young lady cornered, I think it's in front of a car, and has the knife, is ready to plunge the knife into this girl's chest and could perhaps have killed that girl on the spot, and the police shoot her. And so now we've got unrest in Columbus, Ohio now. Yeah. They are decrying the murder, they're calling this a murder now, of this young lady, because the police didn't have to shoot her. Now, what I want to know is, what were they supposed to do? That's what I'd like to know. Exactly when you are threatening another citizen with a knife, which could be a fatal attack, and the police are yelling at you, and you ignore them, and you go after a person with a knife, exactly what are they supposed to do? I don't know what kind of stupid answers people come up with. Shoot the knife out of her hand. I mean, you gotta have BBs for brains. You watch too much Lone Ranger or whatever. Because that's not reality, folks. You'd shoot a knife out of somebody's hand or shoot them in the leg and kill somebody else trying to be a marksman in the heat of a real battle where somebody's life is in danger. No, you go center mass. You stop the threat. It is the same thing I would do in a self-defense situation. I'm not going to be saying, well, shoot his ear and that'll teach him. That'll warn him. I mean, yeah. Sometimes you just wonder, what world do people live in? But what we know is the left is concerned about this young lady's death. But what I brought up yesterday, Jaslyn Adams, 7 years old, sitting in a car, innocently going to McDonald's, 6 times shot by another black person, and nobody has a word to say about it.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
In the spring of 1972, actor George Sanders took a vacation in a resort area in Spain. At the time, Sanders was 65 years of age. He had what many people work for in life. He had fame and fortune, he had a good education, and he had good health for a person his age. Yet while on that vacation, George Sanders committed suicide. On a note which he left, he stated, "I am bored and have already lived enough." There are many people who feel that way. Life loses its meaning and they lose the desire to go on living. They're simply tired of living. It isn't hard for life to get that way, especially if one's purpose for life doesn't stretch beyond himself. We need to remember also that many share equally the lost zest for living with Sanders had, who do not commit physical suicide. There's a great truth running through the very fiber of life. That truth is this: the zest for living disappears when a purpose for living doesn't exist. One of the elementary rules for life to have meaning is for a person to find purpose in it all. For without purpose, nothing really matters. And that purpose, if it is to keep us going, must be above and beyond ourselves. The carpenter from Nazareth laid it out in a very simple way when he said, "The person who loses his life for my sake shall find it." When you have committed yourself to building a better world, to working for man's creator, to helping the human race learn to love and help each other, then life is always worth living. Despite the opinion to the contrary, fame and fortune do not, of themselves, put purpose and meaning into life. Did you ever notice that very few poor people commit suicide? They have to keep going because someone else is depending on them. Lose your life in service to your fellow man. Give yourself over to making the world a better place. Follow the advice of that Galilean carpenter, and you will find life. You will find life with meaning and purpose, abundant life, life full of zest. The person who lives only for himself will one day become bored and grow tired of it all. Eventually, the meaning of existence will disappear. Then there will be no purpose to sustain a desire to press on. The person who loses his life for my sake shall find it. There's a world of truth in that statement. The person who heeds its truth will never lose the purpose for or meaning of life. The person who ignores it will often die years before he is buried. Lee Roston, writing in the Library Journal, had this to say: "The purpose of life is not to be happy, but to matter, to be productive, to be useful, to have it make some difference that you lived at all." A person striving to make the world a better place in which to live hasn't got time to become bored.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And we're back. The number is 888-589-8840. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, why she's even quoted, why the media pays attention to her, I frankly do not know. But because they do and they publish her stuff all over the place, somebody has got to bring reality and bring some biblical wisdom to the table, because she certainly has no idea what that is. I mean, she is just completely lost. Here's what she said. "This is not resolution. It's just a moment, but this is a resolution. And this doesn't end until we address the massive systemic institutional racism in the United States that accepts black people, our black brothers and sisters, our brown brothers and sisters, our native brothers and sisters, as less than human." That is literally what this is. that we're willing, that is literally what it is, that we're willing to accept violence against some communities as a necessary cost for safety. I know it may come across as a personal attack. I don't mean it that way. I simply mean to address, I don't mean it as a personal attack against her any more than Elijah was personally attacking Ahab and Jezebel. He wasn't personally against them. He was against what they were doing. But you know, that what I just read to you, that is about the biggest, most convoluted bunch of garbage I've ever heard. I mean, it really is. It just doesn't mean anything. It doesn't say anything. The institutional racism what'd she say? That accepts black people, our black brothers and sisters, as less than human. Where? Who? This was a resolution of that particular instance. Now, here again, I am an American of African ancestry. I have brown skin. I have lived on this earth and in this country for 69 years. I can never point to a single instance in which I could say one of my fellow citizens treated me like less than human. Now, I think Derek Chauvin did mistreat and maybe dehumanize George Floyd, but that is not some indication of a widespread plague of mistreating and dehumanizing black folks. And when people buy into that, well, they're buying into a kind of mental delusion. It's just not real. Most Americans in this country, overwhelmingly, I dare say 99%, just deal with people as people. This is not the Jim Crow era, no matter how much Stacey Abrams and her little communist cohorts and George Soros want to try to promote that. By the way, with the assistance of the Communist Chinese Party. While they look the other way at the abuses of the communists and the totalitarian torture and murder and incarceration and disappearing of Chinese citizens who don't go along with the program. The NBA is busy running over there to get that money and busy denouncing their own country. Like, we're the worst place in the world. Oh, yes. I mean, do you know those idiots actually had the nerve to say, you can't call general manager, you can't call the owners of NBA teams owners anymore because that harks back to slavery. No slave in the world has ever been paid $100 million a year, whatever some of these guys are making. I mean, are you kidding me? It's a business. And the business has employees. And the employees are on a team. And the people who own the franchise are owners. Who invested their hard-earned money are owners. I mean, any more than the owner of a store. The people who work at the store aren't slaves. But, I mean, this is the madness that you get into with these folks. And I just hope my fellow Americans, see, I don't like this construct, my black brothers and sisters. I'm not her brother. She's godless. My brothers and sisters are those, just like Jesus said, who are my brothers and my sisters, but those who do the will of my Father, which is in heaven. That's what I'm looking at, not the color of people's skin. She's not my sister. She's my fellow human being and she needs help. And Barack Obama's not my brother. He's my fellow human being, and he needs help. He needs God. Look, you talk about stirring up the hornet's nest. When I talk like that, oh, my goodness, some people's heads explode. And look, Jasmine Adams, 7 years old, was shot 6 times by one of her what? Her brothers? Because his skin color is dark? I mean, it's preposterous. So here again, I use words like idiot and stupid. I'm not trying to personally insult people, but I don't know of any other way to describe this kind of empty-headed thinking. I mean, look, it is brainwashing, and I've used the term cult. It is cult-like thinking because it denies the facts. And the thing is, it often comes, as in her case, as in Ocasio-Cortez's case, it comes from people who are sitting in the catbird seat. They are on top of the world. This woman is paid attention to by worldwide media. And she's raising millions of dollars and crying like the victim of so much American oppression. Now, if there were real American oppression, then my wish would become a reality. We'd just kick you out of this country. You don't mean that. But look, and here again, notice I've never called for kicking anybody out, right? I've only called for them to please leave voluntarily. You know, but that would be real oppression to say, hey, Miss Ocasio-Cortez, come with us. You know, put her on an airplane and say, tell the pilot the location of your choice. Bye. Now, that would be oppression. But give me a break, folks. Give me a break. And am I saying that there's no racism and that there are no racist people? Look, I've met people with British backgrounds who hate Irish people. I mean, it's real, folks. It's real. I start talking and I go, what? Whoa. And the things that they say about the Irish, and I have no doubt, and the Irish, they're probably Irish people who feel the same way about people of British descent because, of course, they've been at war with each other for a long time. I hope that most of that is over now. But their skin color is the same. It's not the skin, folks. It's the sin. Okay, let's come to your... Oh, my goodness gracious. You know what? Folks, forgive me. I am almost out of time, but you all stand by because I don't want to cut you short. We've got some full lines. And as soon as we come back, I'm coming right to your calls. I want to hear what you all have to say about not only the outcome of the Chauvin trial, but what you have to say about the general atmosphere that's being created. Now we've got unrest in Columbus over another shooting where a girl was trying to... And what about the life of the girl whose life was saved from being murdered by the girl who was trying to stab her? What about her life? And as I said, what about the life of Jaslyn Adams, 7 years old, who was doing nothing to anybody, wasn't involved in any melee, wasn't out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning shooting a gun, just sitting in a car like kids do, probably excited about going to McDonald's and probably getting a Happy Meal or something. And she ends up dead, shot 6 times. By some idiots, and they weren't police. Where's the hue and cry? Where's the media outrage? Where's the concern? And you know what? Over the years, there have been hundreds of these kids, hundreds of them. 5, 6, 10, 11, 12 years old. Hundreds of them. I said in Chicago alone in the last 12 years, 5,000, mainly black people, murdered. By whom? By other black people, mainly young black men, roaming the streets of the city, doing whatever they want to do. And then these folks have the nerve to come to us and tell us that we need to defund the police and dismantle the police and we need to do away with the police. I mean, you've even got people like Rashida Tlaib talking about de-police. In other words, no police, just do away with the police. And then who exactly is going to maintain order? Her? I'd like to see the kind of order that would be maintained by a woman who, in front of her young child, called the president a name I couldn't dare repeat, on or off the air. Yeah, no thank you. I'll take the police all day long and twice on Sunday. Stand by, coming right to your calls when we get back.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Here's another of our core values. AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thank you for standing with us, and we thank you for your support. In His Image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality.
I loved it. I loved how biblically sound it was, all the scripture to back it up.
The testimonies, very powerful. If it's a prodigal child that has just run away, or one that's caught up in same-sex attraction, there's hope in Jesus.
In His Image is now available on DVD and can be purchased in bulk to pass out to friends and family. Order today by visiting afastore.net.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it too. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance, and MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month. You might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by April 30th, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch like more than 400,000 people already have and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Do you ever feel as though you and your husband are drifting? This is Focus on the Family Minute, and today Patricia Ashley shares how she felt disconnected from her husband, but then noticed how much time he spent with their daughter.
When he'd be working on the car, she would go out there and lay up under the car or sit down on the side of the car and talk to him. So I started going out there sitting at the side of the car talking. And when he'd be out in the backyard cutting the grass, she'd be walking up and down the grass with him and talking to him. And guess what? I started walking up and down the grass and I started talking to him.
Well, Patricia took a cue from her daughter and decided that she needed to spend more time with her husband. And that's a key to having a stronger relationship. You can hear her entire inspiring message today at familyminute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Well, you all have been patient. I got to come to your calls. I want to hear what you all are thinking and saying about this craziness that's going on in our country right now. So let's go to Tom in Texas. Tom, welcome.
How you doing, Christian Dr. Jackson?
All right, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. I kneel for the cross and I stand for the flag.
Amen.
I got something for you, man. Won't they just get rid of the lead and start using tranquilizer guns, man? They make tranquilizer where you can shoot somebody with it and put them out just immediately. That way, they take care of the bad guy and the good guy. They can wake up in jail the next day and then they can deal with the judge with it.
That's an interesting idea, Tom, the use of tranquilizers. I had not heard that suggested by anybody. And look, I'm sure that might be something police might consider. Of course, it is kind of like tasers. You wonder whether everybody will be equally impacted by that, because I'm sure you know, Tom, that they use tasers with the intent of stopping somebody who is a threat, and the person just blows right through the taser. I mean, or it slows them down for a second or two, and then they're right back at it. So, here again, we're often dealing with very dangerous people, some of whom are firing weapons themselves. And if they know that all the police have is a tranquilizer and they're firing lead, hey, that's not going to be a good outcome for the police officer. But it's an idea. I'm sure that somebody is probably contemplating right now as a way of dealing with situations where maybe if you've got a person with a knife and they can't get close enough to you to do harm and you use something that would stop them rather than using deadly force. I would defer to police on how they think that would work. I wonder if you shot that woman who was about to stab that girl with a tranquilizer, would the effect have been immediate enough that it would have still saved that girl's life? Or would you have been gambling with her life to do so? So there's some complicated questions with regard to that. But as always, I have a very creative audience. They've got a lot of ideas. And I think that we put them all on the table. And what do you all think? Let's go to the next call. Let's go to Stan in Tennessee. Stan, welcome.
Good morning, Bishop. Amen. Amen to everything you've said. And I try to catch you every day, and I appreciate
Thank you,
your
Stan.
Voice. And God bless you. My question is, or quick comment, systemic racism. So the president and the vice president are saying that racism is behind every, lurking behind every corner throughout the whole country, and that it's just everywhere, and that all white people are evil and bad, and y'all just need to be ashamed of yourselves. And, you know, I just, they're wanting to rip apart the fabric of this country. They're wanting to, instead of bringing people together and sitting down, let's just say there is a problem. Why don't they bring people, leaders across this country together and try to solve these problems? No, that's not what they want, because
right.
it fits their narrative to keep everything stirred up.
Stan, what can I say but amen to that? You are absolutely right. They don't want that. They just don't want that. That's why Black Lives Matter can ignore the many black people killed by other black people in black-on-black crime, because they don't care about the deaths of black people. They care about their agenda and their narrative. And so they blow up every police situation as if that's the major threat to the lives of black people. And it's just not true. I mean, it is a basic, palpable, contemptible lie, but they keep telling it. And of course, the mainstream media helps amplify it, because, you know, you get people like Don Lamont at the Communist News Network, and he's always happy to point out that, you know, the mistreatment of black people. And here again, here's a guy being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to sit in front of a camera and pontificate with nonsense, and he's complaining about how bad the country is. Yeah, right. not so bad for him, apparently. Thanks for the call, Stan. God bless you, brother. And thanks for the encouraging words. Let's go to Frank in Oklahoma. Frank, welcome.
Hello. First, a comment about you. I think that I didn't realize you were 69. I always thought you were more like 29 or 19, because you have a passion. And a passion is,
thank you,
the first definition of passion is Christ suffering on the cross. So that's why I figured that's probably a commentary about you. You have this suffering. Now, my question is this, though. You have people that are not saved, people that are born again, and then that people are more mature, mm-hmm. and everyone in God, whether you're not saved, you are saved if you're an immature Christian or mature Christian. Now, the people, let's say, like Barack Obama or the Democrats or stuff like that, are they just immature Christians because they lack not because of their ignorance, or they have more evil, or they're not saved, generally speaking? So can you be a Democrat politician and be an immature Christian and going to go to heaven? So is it ignorance, evil? What's the source?
Frank, it's an excellent question, and I think it's probably some of all of the above. And of course, only God ultimately knows a person's heart and whether they've truly been born again. But Jesus did say, by their fruit shall you know them. And I have a very, very difficult time believing, although I'm not God, so I don't get to make the choice whether people go to heaven or hell. He does, based upon their confession of Jesus Christ as Savior. But when people can vehemently and avidly, Barack Obama, for example, In Illinois, Barack Obama was the sole champion opposing the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, which simply said, if you set out to do an abortion and the child is inadvertently delivered from its mother's uterus alive, that child must have medical treatment to preserve that child's life. Barack Obama opposed that vehemently, and as far as I know, still opposes allowing a child under those circumstances to live, because his view is, if you allow that, you will frustrate the will of the mother and the doctor, and their will should prevail. So in other words, better to kill the child than make the mother and the doctor feel inconvenienced or feel like their will has been somehow supplanted. I don't know how you can be a Christian and think like that. I just don't. I don't see it. I don't see Biden as a Christian. I don't see most of these leftists as Christians. Now, on the question, is it possible to be a Democrat and be a Christian? Look, I was a Democrat when I was a Christian. But I came under conviction and realized I could not be a part of a party that supported things that God categorically condemned. So, but Frank, ultimately, the Lord knows them that are his. But it's a profound question. I really believe that those who are truly Christians have got to come over to our side because they've got to see the utter moral degeneracy into which the Democrat Party has descended and continues to descend. Thanks for the call, Frank. We appreciate it. Let's see. Let's go to Barbara in Ohio. Barbara, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the fact that the major media do not want you to know or anyone to know the true facts about anything. And in the case of the George Floyd case, the fact is that George Floyd did not die on the cement parking lot. He was resuscitated in the squad car and in the hospital.
Oh,
did you know that came out in the facts?
I did not hear that, and I'm not going to dispute you on it. I did not hear that.
Actually, I heard it from somebody on AFR, and I think it was one of the night men that told of that same day. One of the night men. I don't know if it was Brian Fisher or not. It could have been. But anyway, it was somebody that had read the entire transcript or listened to it. And there were a lot of facts that he could have used, like you said, Bishop, you know, if he had spoken up. But I believe that he was threatened with death.
All right, Barbara, I'm getting close to the end of the program. I want to get a couple other calls in. Let me say this. One thing is clear. That's why I said if the jury had come to a different decision, I would have supported the jury because they get to hear all the evidence. They get to assess its credibility. They get to determine the weight of the evidence presented and how much credence they give it. And we're not there to sit and listen to and sift through every bit of it the way they are. But that's an interesting point, and we will certainly check that out. I had not heard that. I'd heard that he never revived after they picked him up off the ground. So, but thanks for the call, Barbara. We're always willing to hear a different perspective on things. Gives us something to think about and something to investigate. Let's go to Steve in Michigan. Steve, welcome.
How you doing?
I'm blessed, Steve. How are you?
Beautiful day. I'll make this very quick. I was just going to reiterate the same thing. It was Brian Fisher yesterday. I listened to his podcast this morning, and he said that he was revived. I don't know if it was in the ambulance or the whatever, that he was revived for a little bit. He had like three times the lethal amount of fentanyl in his system. So, that's all I wanted to say.
All right, Steve, thank you. Well, remember, everybody, too, that the instructions to the jury, as I understand them, were if the knee on the neck was not necessarily the sole cause, but a substantial cause. Now, what's the standard of substantial cause? Well, see, that gets to a point of judgment, doesn't it? I mean, substantial versus the sole cause. So here again, that's why these things have to be left in the hands of the jury, because they have to meet and deliberate and come to a conclusion about what they think this all means. So they came to a conclusion. If they come to a different one, frankly, I would have supported it. And because we've got to trust our criminal justice system to come to fair and just conclusions, or we end up fighting in the streets, folks. And that's what I think the left really wants anyway. But we're not, that's not where we're going. Praise God. Oh, my goodness. Gary from Iowa, my apologies to you. I wish I could have gotten you on. I was trying to get to you, but please call me again, okay? So I can get you on. Well, folks, that's going to do it today. Thank you all for your calls, and thank you for your insights and your comments. Look, keep this in mind. That's what this network is all about. We hear different perspectives and respect the First Amendment and your right to have a different perspective. You won't get that in the mainstream media. So thank you all for praying for us and supporting us. Thank you for what you did in Share-a-thon, because we're going to keep standing up and speaking up for you and for the truth. And in the meantime, remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.